Androgens are dirty hormones. They are derivatives of male hormones like testosterone and DHEA. These derivatives essentially block our other hormone pathways, raise blood sugar, raise insulin, and create a lot of hormone hell in the body. They're responsible for scalp hair loss, for acne, and then body hair. We're seeing a rise in those levels in young women. And in men, what we're seeing is kind of the flip of that, which is a rise in stored estrogen in men.
How can they start to heal? Just by cleaning up their lifestyle, their diet?
Definitely. I mean, I think...
In the book, you do discuss the five key hormone shifts.
Yes, I do.
What are those?
I love talking about these. Okay, we're going to start with our teenagers, 13 to 19.
Which I have a 17-year-old stepdaughter.
Oh, you do?
So okay, you have a 16-year-old.
I have a 16-year-old.
Oh, got so many.
So you're going to relate to this for sure. I call them the rock stars.
Oh,
and the reason I call them the rock stars is because you never know where they are. So they're up, they're down, they're mad, they're sad, they're happy, they love you, they hate you. Wait, you just don't know.
Oh, do they?
All the time.
You don't exist. You're the best.
Exactly. Exactly. Too many stories there. But their hormones are doing the exact same thing. They're all over the place. They're erratic. And so if we can help girls in this age, honestly, we could even say boys, but if we can help our teenagers understand that if they can master their gut health and understand the word inflammation, then they are laying the foundation to healthy hormones as they go into the second shift. And the second shift is all about your early 20s. And I call these women the hustlers because usually you're burning the candle at both ends. You're going out all night, maybe you're dating, you are trying to establish your career in whatever form or fashion. There's a lot going on. And so you're not always really taking the best care of yourself. But if we could tell these women, you know, that, hey, if you didn't master gut and inflammation from the previous shift, you better do it now. And also, as your cortisol levels are getting higher and higher and higher, here's how you need to take care of yourself. Because if they don't, then you hit what happened to me and to so many women that I meet today, too. You hit your mid to late 20s. And that's, again, where these symptoms are now no longer symptoms that you can ignore. They go from silent, quiet whispers to full-out expressions where you start to become unrecognizable to yourself in many ways, whether it's physical or mental or cognitive or you can't focus. You know, it shows up in so many different ways. So what's happening there, this is where we start to see progesterone levels go down. So we've had this maybe poor gut health. We have high cortisol. We have rampant inflammation, all of that's increasing. Now progesterone is crashing and burning. And so a lot of these women are essentially presenting as low progesterone, and they need support because these same women now are trying to have children. Like they're trying to get pregnant or they're starting careers, whatever they're doing, and they're hitting a wall because they're not able to and they're not sure why. And this is where we see a lot of PCOS and endometriosis, Hashimoto's, thyroiditis. This is where we really see a lot of these diseases express themselves.
So they're not allowed to. You said they want to have kids. They want to do all the things still, but they don't have the energy to do that. Is that because their adrenals are just shot?
Well, sometimes it's an energy issue and sometimes they're trying and it's not happening. And it's because their adrenals are shot, their progesterone has crashed, usually indirectly some other metabolic markers are off, and that becomes the block. And so usually, you know, it's the IVF route, right? Everyone starts running. I'm going to do rounds and rounds of IVF. I'm going to freeze my eggs. I'm going to do all this stuff. That's hard on the body too. Not that it's not miraculous that we're able to have that option, but we have to understand that it's hard on the body as well, and we have to take that into consideration. And so that's the third shift. And then going into the fourth shift is probably a really tricky shift. So the fourth shift is kind of perimenopause. So we went rock stars, hustlers, superstars are the women in their late 20s.
Superstars.
They're the women.
We didn't say that.
So we didn't call them that, but they're the women in their late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
You know? And from there, we move to superwomen who are the women.
Wait, superstars and then superwomen?
And then superwomen because we're moving on up. They're the ones who really, I feel like, are the most stressed out of all the different.
Fuck, I'm a superwoman.
And here's why, because you're at the peak of your career or your career's doing this You usually have a lot of familial responsibilities. You may start to have more parental responsibilities, right? And there's just a lot more on your plate. Usually,
your friends because everyone's busy.
The community's falling apart. That's true. And because that's a really good point, because when you're in the young kid or baby kid phase, I feel like there's more community there. But the minute the children kind of start to get big, I feel like we start to lose community and women start to scatter and kind of do their own things again. So anyhow, but that's a tricky phase. And this is where you already had the low progesterone happening. Now we're seeing estrogen start to go down too. So it hasn't plummeted, but it's starting to go down, right? And then we're also seeing blood sugar and insulin start to come up. But these are natural patterns that have answers. Like, they just need support. And then from there, those super women cross over into menopause, right, where there's hormone depletion. And I call them commanders, because if we go back to Eastern philosophy, these are the women that should be leading their communities, their families, really mentoring younger women, taking them into the fold and lifting them up as well. So those were the five hormone shifts. And in the book, we get obviously more in depth about like what each shift involves, what to test, how to deal with each shift, the things you can do, you know, that are quick and easy, and then what to do if you want like a deeper dive into all of that as well.
So I want to jump back to some of the stages, because we did have that, you know, connection with the teenager, especially the teenager.
We love our teenagers.
Teenagers. They're so great because they remind me of when I was a teenager and I was so awkward. And I feel like they're not that awkward. I feel like they're kind of cooler these days, but still you're like, teenagers are just so weird. Anyways, that's for another time that we can connect on that. But what should they be consuming now? Because I'm having the issue right now with all the canned beverages. The fucking energy drinks.
What?
Yes. What is that? Oh, we've got different ones at our house.
What do you have?
Well, we've got the yerba mate. Now we have Zoa, which my 11-year-old, I found him drinking one of those last night.
Oh my gosh.
My husband, I was like, you should make him run around the block 5 times.
We're having a Celsius fight.
Like, what is the deal? Is it like a cool factor?
It's TikTok. Like, it's whatever's on TikTok. It's whatever TikTok says is cool, is right, is it. So first I got the Monster. I dealt with that one for a little bit. But it was like, well, this is healthier than coffee. I'm like, how? And why are you drinking coffee? But that's a little separate conversation, you know? But
what is it doing to their hormones over time?
Bad. It's too much caffeine. So the caffeine. We have multiple issues with it. You've got the caffeine in some of them, right? I mean, we can pick them apart, but a lot of them have too much caffeine. That's driving cortisol up. Someone like my daughter, I don't know about yours, but she can't get a good night's sleep. She's up super late. She's waking up really early. I'm about to get her an Oura ring for her so she can start to educate herself about her sleep. But I know it's because she's drinking those stupid drinks. And they don't allow her to get deep REM sleep and deep sleep, which rests the brain. Then she's telling me that I'm having trouble focusing. Well, you might focus better if you slept more, you know? So I think the caffeine is a problem. The other problem is the actual carbonation and how it impacts the pH of the gut. So that's another issue as well. You're kind of wearing away the gut lining between the caffeine and the carbonation both, because that's all they're doing, right? So that's your second issue, is that we're impacting gut health dramatically with some of those drinks. And then I do think it indirectly might impact the microbiome as well. So when we started talking about these hormone shifts with the girls and called them rock stars, the gut and inflammation were the two concepts I wanted them to master. And a lot of what they're doing currently is in complete opposition to having a healthy gut and to keeping inflammation at bay.
Well, and truly, like, it's hard to make any teenager do anything that they don't want to do. So it's almost like they have to, you know, witness failure themselves or be in bed for a week because they don't, God's know why, you know, they don't feel well, their stomach aches, but the carbonation decreasing their gut lining, that's a new one for me, actually. I didn't know carbonation truly did that. I thought it just was like a phosphoric acid and depleted your bone.
That too. That's another one.
what should they be consuming? Like, what would be the best thing for them? If one of them were like, one day they woke up and they're like, you know what? Today's the day. I'm going to throw away the Red Bull, the Celsius, like no more cans for me, just water with a little lemon, ginger.
You know what my daughter has been doing? And I don't know why. I think it's because all the stuff has been making her feel bad. She started making herself a green smoothie every single day. Now, that might be a reach, right? But she's literally taking spinach and celery and all this other stuff and blending it together, and she has it every single day. So that's fantastic. But in between Celsius and green smoothies is flavored water, right? Like, how about flavored water that you can drink throughout the day?
Natural flavoring. Please tell everyone in my household what natural flavoring does to you.
Natural flavoring is not really natural. How's that? Really, when I'm saying flavored water, I'm talking about adding fruit to water, drinking that, right? Adding lemon to water, drinking that. That's more of what we want them doing. And I think that if we can make it cool and they can have fun with it, they would do it. If their friends are doing it, they would do it. You know,
I call it sex up your water.
Yep. Oh, I like that.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. I'm going to borrow that one.
Yeah.
I love it. But yeah, I mean, just switching to that is an option, right? If we can get them to do that. And then I think the other challenge for them is, you know, the quality of food they're consuming when they're out and about. So it's very hard to police that. So instead, what I'm trying to do is say, eat in home, try to eat food at home Monday through Friday, which you do Saturday and Sunday, we're going to let go. But that way you're lowering kind of their load of fast food, high preservative foods, you know, those type of things.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times it is that leading by example. I mentioned this in another episode that children are very observant. They're very observant. They're like sponges and they will take information in. So we don't necessarily have to say, don't do this.
Do this, right?
Do that. But if you don't provide it or if you don't consume it yourself, you know, drink water instead of a carbonated drink or something of that matter. You know, learning by seeing.
That's so true.
It's huge.
I mean, maybe my daughter's doing green smoothies because she sees us doing them. Right. You know? I don't know where that came from.
TikTok?
But maybe it's TikTok, right? I can't take all the credit. It might be TikTok. But you're absolutely right. Like, having those healthy habits as a family and them being able to watch that, then that's hopefully something that they carry with them.
Yeah, just providing the sources as much as possible. But you mentioned before that you work a lot around the practice of Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. So explain to people, because I'm like, Ayurveda, what? What is it? How do you apply it? Why do you apply it to your patients, their lives? And what are some of the astounding results that you've seen?
Definitely. So Ayurveda is a very old, some say it's even the oldest system of medicine out there. But it's rooted, or its origins are in India for sure. And the reason I like it is because it believes in sort of individualizing each patient, right? Or each person. And so it talked a lot about the dosha system, which is a way of categorizing people. And then based off certain types, there would be a prescriptive way to eat. There would be certain things to take, and there would be a certain way to exercise. And in studying sort of their methodology, again, I love marrying it to Western medicine because then you can use the data to kind of support everything. But in studying their methodology, they were on track, you know. So they talk about, you know, this pitta dosha that's very much a go-getter, has a lot of fire in their system, has a lot of energy, but they will typically burn themselves. And the first thing that they burn is their gut. The gut's the first to go. And from a hormonal standpoint, we see that play out in the thyroid and cortisol and some of these other hormones. And so their remedies and their treatments are actually not that complicated and pretty effective. So when you're thinking about the toolbox, the reason I love Ayurveda is for two reasons. It's one, it helps me understand a patient very quickly. And secondly, it expands what I'm able to offer somebody, right? Like your pitta, we need to follow the, you know, take dairy out of your diet. We also need to add in more gut work because your gut is very fragile as a pitta. I know that right away without labs. And then from there, you know, we can recommend things like what are activities or foods that are going to cool a lot of the spiral.
Are you talking to me directly?
No, I'm not.
No, but I kind of, I am.
Are you pitta?
I'm pretty vata pitta.
I was going to say vata. I am too, vata pitta. But anyhow, so it helps us with understanding the person in front of us. A pitta needs movement, right? There's so much fire. They need movement, but they need balanced movement, not all like HIIT and cardio and weights. You know, they need some balance and some mixing up. Whereas a vata, you know, the other type is not grounded. They're kind of separated from their physical body. So they need a lot of help getting into their physical body and grounding. So they do better with things like yoga, Pilates, but they don't have the bandwidth to do a lot of heavy weights and heavy lifting and things like that. So that's that methodology of thinking about somebody that way and then being able to match them to the right diet and to the right, you know, sort of things to take and ways to live their life is something that I love about Ayurveda.
And you had the third one, which is kapha.
Kapha is the third one. Kapha, again, is more of sort of the nurturer. They move a little bit slower. They may gain weight a little bit more easily. They're typically, though, personality-wise, and Ayurveda says this, they're the nurturers. Like, they really take care of a family unit, right? But their sticky point is oftentimes that they often suffer from depression. They have a lot of issues with blood sugar regulation, and they need a lot of movement. Like, they need to move throughout their day. They need the heavy weights. They need these things. And so, you know, if you've got a person sitting in front of you, and you can be blends of any of these, right? You can be vata, pitta, pitta, kapha, kapha, vata. You have all these different blends that you can be. But, you know, if I'm trying to start you on a roadmap to you by using Ayurvedic principles and trying to find your dosha and then understanding your Chinese medicine component and putting those two things together, I can do a whole treatment plan just starting there. And then we use the labs to make sure we're on the right track and then to redirect if we need to.
I'm coming to you. But, you know, going back to the gut and hormone connection,
right.
You talked about the whole body in maintaining those hormones. You dive really deep into the specifics of nutrition. So what is one key nutritional deficiency that both men and women might have or that shows up more prominently? And how can one attain the benefits through foods?
Men and women. I think it's both. I'm going to have to go for B vitamins and the family of B. Everyone thinks I'm just talking about B12, but I'm talking about B6. I'm talking about folate or B9. All of them need to be methylated. I would say zinc is another one and magnesium. I think those are three deficiencies that I see probably first tier. If I go down to the next level, it's omega-3 fats and vitamin D, we see those deficiencies a lot as well. There are multiple reasons for those deficiencies. It's either food quality, it's genetics, it's how you absorb the foods that you're eating, all of those different things. But remember, your lean proteins, your lean meats are going to have a lot of B vitamins in it. Your leafy greens have a lot of magnesium. Your nuts and your seeds are going to provide the body with a lot of the zinc, if that's, you know, the direction that you need to go in. And then again, your fatty fishes have a lot of vitamin D and have omega-3 fats. So, you know, when we think about healthy foods, like I'm always thinking, how do I get omega-3s? Well, salmon, tuna, eggs, leafy greens, whether it's spinach, kale, you pick your green, dump it in that category, nuts and seeds for the different minerals that you can get. And then some of those leafy greens too, by the way, have a lot of magnesium as well. So those are some of the foods that you can bring into your diet that do make a difference when it comes to hormones.
Because it's one of those things that people are like, I don't have enough money or I don't know which supplement to get. And supplements, to be honest, you can just pee out your money.
Right.
And it can be overwhelming too. I mean, it seems like an easy fix. But I guess with any of these suggestions made, what I always like to tell people is just like take baby steps, you know, or else you're going to get overwhelmed and you're going to give up. Take baby steps, maybe add another vegetable in your meal.
I mean, I just think this whole thing is a journey. And I think that, you know, you have to start where you feel comfortable. And if it starts with food and working on your diet, start there, you know. And if you are not ready to embrace the conversation around food and that feels overwhelming or like too much, sure, start with supplements. But at the end of the day, you can't out-supplement a poor diet, right?
You cannot out-supplement a poor diet.
You can't, you know, that's, it's just not possible. So supplements are named that for that reason. They are supplements to a healthy diet and a healthy lifestyle. So, but just enter the conversation, you know, just enter the group chat is what I say. Like, just start somewhere. And if you can start wherever you feel comfortable, what you will find, and this is the fun part of what I do, you'll find that one small change motivates you for the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. And it becomes a journey. And it's been such a joy to watch patients on that journey. They go from, you want me to do what? To then kind of surpassing me in their ability to dial into their health. And it's really impressive.
Well, I think something that I've learned within my own health history, my own health experience, is that, you know, I have Raynaud's, and a lot of the times when I get flare-ups, they're more internal feelings and people can't see that I'm struggling, right? So I've had to, because no one's believed me, doctors have been shuffled around everywhere, Western medicine, and I do go to Eastern medicine, but when you were saying like the confidence that being built upon little baby steps, you become the advocate for yourself. You become the researcher for yourself. You go down into the deep dive. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I've been so affected by so many different things in my life, right? That mess in one's life, you know, whoever's listening out there, if you feel like, oh my gosh, I just can't get out of this deep, dark hole, right? Start small. Make one tiny little change. Build the habits. Habits stack, right? You'll become, that mess will become your message. So, yeah, I think that's really, really just a great example that we can kind of throw out to people.
I love habit stacking. I love thinking about it that way, because so many people, this is what so many people tell me, I've been good, I've been bad, I failed, you know, I'll do better next time. There's a lot of like guilt and like, I promise Dr. Taz, like by my next one, I'll be good. And then a lot of times you're having the same conversation again, right? So I think that if you can just pick stuff and stick to it and habit stack one small change at a time, it really does lead to big results.
And you mentioned androgens, this word that I was like listening to my book and I was like, do I get it? So androgens are mentioned a lot in your book. What is it? And how can one heal the imbalances?
Androgens are dirty hormones, is probably the best way to describe them. So they are derivatives of male hormones like testosterone and DHEA. So DHT is an androgen. All of those are androgens, by the way. So DHT is an androgen. 17-hydroxyprogesterone is an androgen. Even AMH is an androgen. But these derivatives essentially block our other hormone pathways, raise blood sugar, raise insulin, and create a lot of hormone hell in the body. So they're responsible, for example, for acne, especially like cystic hormonal acne. They're responsible for scalp hair loss and then body hair. And so the reason I probably wrote about androgen so much is that they are responsible for the uptick in PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I think they are really going, I think they're on the rise because of the overall increased chemical load that all of us are getting exposed to from a very young age, even in utero and beyond. And when we look at some of these chemicals, whether it's glyphosate or phthalates or parabens or any of these things, it does have an androgenic impact on our hormones. So it's skewing us that way. So what we're seeing is that we're seeing a rise in those levels in young women. And in men, what we're seeing is kind of the flip of that, which is a rise in stored estrogen in men. So girls are getting androgenized, boys are getting estrogenized. So our chemical load is creating a massive hormone shift amongst our population.
So men are becoming more feminine and females are becoming more masculine.
Indirectly, yes.
In order to make someone else that's selling a product out there more money. In the end, that's what I think about it.
Yeah.
Dirty hormones.
It's just dirty hormones. It's probably the best way to do that.
How can they start to heal? Just by cleaning up their lifestyle, their diet?
Definitely. I mean, I think the biggest thing is cleaning up diet. That's always your starting point. The second is thinking about the liver. The liver is really the laundromat of the body. So really understanding where some of these chemicals are entering. Is it food, body care, skin care, home products? Like, you know, where is the stuff coming from? And then doing things to support the liver, and also remembering that toxicity is, yes, from the environment, but it's also from our stress and our emotional trauma and grief and all these other things that we carry within us.
Seriously, my relationship that I have right now with my liver, because I sound like a whole bag of oil. I promise, like I'm okay. I'm fine. But I'm going through mold detox as well. And so my liver, my master detoxer, is a little overburdened. And so when you talk about liver, when you talk about high cortisol levels, my husband and I are both extremely high right now. I'm taking something that's trying to help me calm my central nervous system, but everything else just goes even more haywire with that. So you were mentioning, as the master detoxifier, the liver. What does it do for us, and what does it do specifically to our hormones?
These are such good questions. So the primary responsibility of the liver is to grab things in the body that are not supposed to be there, package them, and send them back out. In doing so, it also indirectly regulates blood sugar. When it's not able to do its job because it's bogged down, you like just think about like an incoming stream of stuff and it's getting clogged up and it can't do that job, we develop hormone imbalances. And those hormone imbalances include things like high androgens, the estrogen dominance, high insulin or blood sugar levels. So those hormone imbalances in turn disrupt everything else. So we need to, a lot of PCOS, by the way, polycystic ovarian syndrome, a lot of that is rooted in poor liver health. And some of it is dictated by genetics, right? There are certain genes where the liver is just not as efficient as it may be in somebody else. So cleaning the liver, supporting the liver, doing a detox periodically, right?
Hold on. That's a great example. And then you're going to go back to the rest of the list. But the detox, oh my gosh, so many people are like, cleanse, detox, you know? Whoa, they're pretty different things if you think about it. So explain the differences to the audience. What is the difference between a detox and what is the difference between a cleanse and a liver-specific detox?
A cleanse to me is just the removal of foods and products that are inflammatory. That's what a cleanse is. So you can go on a juice cleanse where you're just getting rid of foods that are inflammatory. You're giving the gut a rest, but that's not necessarily a detox. A detox is where you're really trying to activate, again, not to be too sciencey, but trying to activate phase one and phase two detox pathways that take place primarily in the liver and then secondarily in the gut and through bile and through these other systems. So a detox targets the liver, the gallbladder, and the colon, all three of them. And detoxes are done by, same as a cleanse, removing inflammatory foods and foods that you shouldn't be eating, but they are leveled up a little bit. And the level up is there's a lot of liver supporters typically in a detox, or things that are sort of cycling up phase one and phase two activity. These can be natural. They can be different herbs and supplements. They can also be things that are sort of put together in different formulas so that that ramping up of those two pathways actually happens. So there are a lot of liver detoxes that are packaged that have those type of products in it. And they are primarily intending to impact that system.
So talking on a feasible level for people to detox their liver, because I know you could go to a center and be monitored and go through the whole thing. But what are some nutritionally feasible ways, you know, even lifestyle practices, you know, reduction of alcohol, or what does alcohol even further do to your liver?
Well, alcohol to me is probably public enemy number one, right? When it comes to liver health and hormones, because it contributes to that bogging down of those two pathways and they can't do their job when they're overburdened with dealing with the alcohol coming in. So I think removal of alcohol is an obvious one. I think if we want to stick to a food-based way of detoxing, not one of these sort of packaged things that even we at the clinic have when it comes to detoxing. But a food-based way would be to really up the amount of foods in your diet that contain glutathione, which is an antioxidant. Glutathione helps cleanse the liver, helps to move things through, oxygenates the cells. So it really acts as a great natural detoxifier. And it's going to be in a lot of our greens and deeply pigmented foods and berries and things like that. So filling up your diet with, you know, the leafy greens, the yellow pigmented vegetables, you know, a lot of these high antioxidant foods is a food-based way to do it. You can also add in a lot of different teas that support the liver, right? And help like cleanse all that out. So everything from like a milk thistle tea to dandelion tea, those are great ones as well. You can do remedy-based like celery juice, cleanses the liver. That's a great one too. That's one of my favorites.
That's such a trend people love.
That's such a trend. I can't believe it's still happening.
Can you just eat celery?
You can eat it too. It has the fiber. The point of ever juicing anything is that you're trying to hyper-concentrate the amount of the nutrients you're getting, right? But then you miss out on the fiber. So sometimes it's just mixing it up so you get benefits of each.
Okay. So the liver, the master detoxer, do a detox, do a detox for that. Remove some things that are hindering your health, that are building up those androgens, that are creating dirty hormones, not the good dirty, right? Because that'll ultimately, I think, bring, I feel like we live in this world that people are like, I want to lose weight, right. You know? So that'll naturally help you regulate your thyroid, get better sleep.
All of it.
All of it. So,
which is a really great point, by the way, a lot of weight is from the liver because the liver is responsible for the management of blood sugar, right? The liver's very much involved in how glucose is taken up into cells. So when we clean, this is why I think there's an obesity crisis, right? Because we have this toxic load, you know, the populations that are eating a lot of junk and processed foods have a bigger toxic load. It's weighing down the liver. Their blood sugars are higher. Their insulin's higher. That's the childhood obesity. That's a lot of what we're seeing kind of in some of the different populations across the globe, honestly. So the liver is involved in weight. So the more you clean it, the more you're helping to bring blood sugar down. You're bringing insulin down. It's going to be easier to lose weight.
I know. And what I think about that right now is the whole topic of these over-the-counter meds.
GLP-1.
Yeah, semaglutides. And like Ozempic, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And how does it truly affect your hormones in the long run or just your entire body?
So there is a patient where it's appropriate to prescribe those medications. And those are patients that have a lot of weight to lose. And that weight is now triggering inflammation and triggering disruptions in their hormones, right? Because they're in a feedback loop of, you know, their hormones signaling more hunger, and then that in turn creating more hormonal issues, right? Those patients usually do have crashed out thyroids, usually do have estrogen dominance. They definitely have insulin resistance, and they're usually in a chronic state of stress because of all the inflammation in their body. For that patient that has already tried diet and lifestyle, when you have more than 30, 40, 50 pounds to lose, it can be very demotivating because it takes a long time with lifestyle changes to see that result. So I feel like those medications serve that population that has really struggled with obesity for a very long period of time. But the problem I have with it, and I don't know if you watched any of the specials recently or things like that, the problem I have with it is that it's being prescribed in a way that's saying, here's your medicine. You're going to be on this forever. And if you come off this medicine, the weight's going to come back. I would like to see these medications used in a different way for those patients in particular. I would like to see it as their motivator and their jumpstart while they work to rehab their gut and their liver and all these other systems and get that hormone balancing under control. And I know that's possible because I have patients that without medications have lost 40, 50, 60 pounds. They were just persistent and did it over a very long period of time, right? And their weight did not come back. So when we take the time to reset the microbiome and reset the hormones, it's not a yo-yo. You're on the medication, you lose weight. You're off the medication, you're going to gain weight. It's more of, this is just an impetus to help you lose weight. That's what I would like to see with these medications. That's not how they're being prescribed today. Now, for people under that, who have under, 25 pounds or so to lose, I'm super hesitant to prescribe these medications. I feel like they can do it with the right guidance, and with the right motivation and support by doing it in a slow, gentle, healthy way that's going to be more long-lasting and serve them well, in the future.
Not create that ongoing, what is it called?
Gastroparesis, where the gut can't move effectively, So you feel full, essentially.
That's crazy. But that kind of goes into my next question, which is a little bit on the term of the biohacking your hormones, biohacking your body. Questions I have are workouts and other things like cold plunges and how that's effective with men versus women.
Yeah.
Or should one not be doing it? And even intermittent fasting. Can you talk a little bit about all those?
Yes. Okay. Let's do maybe one at a time. So intermittent fasting, great for men. They seem to do really well with it. I think they do well with it because they don't have the hormonal variation that we have. We don't do that great with intermittent fasting when we have hormone cycling or hormone irregularity. So women in perimenopause don't do so great in it. Women that are postmenopause seem to do okay because they're in a more steady state when it comes to their hormones. Here's how you can really decide if intermittent fasting is right for you. Intermittent fasting works if your HRV or your heart rate variability is in a good place, is around 40 to 50 or so. Then we know the body's not super stressed. But when the body's stressed and you add intermittent fasting, and by that I mean the 16-hour fast, those type of fasts or longer, that's actually more stressful to the body and pushing the metabolic set point down. So you see results for the first 6 weeks. But then after that, the metabolic set point moves down to where it needs less and less, essentially. And then you start to store anything that's over that. So I actually feel like cycle fasting is the way to go, where you judge your stress, you judge your hormones, you do fast maybe one day a week or 2 days a week, or you do it 1 week out of a month. But it's not a day-to-day-to-day-to-day type thing where you're going to push your metabolic set point down. Cold plunging. There's been some good studies on cold plunging, but really they may be a little bit exaggerated. But essentially the idea there is that it's increasing brown fat, and brown fat is metabolically more active fat. That comes from looking at studies of Eskimos and people in very harsh cold climates where they converted a lot of their fat over to brown. There's white fat and brown fat, and they converted it over to brown fat. And brown fat is more metabolically active, less inflammatory. So cold plunging is, hey, can we convert fat by changing temperature to brown fat? Some studies say yes, it's actually helping. And some people have seen benefits with weight loss and just feeling better overall with that. And I forgot your last one. What was it?
And the workouts.
Workouts. So which particular...
Is working out harder actually sabotaging us?
Yes, it is. And so it's interesting to see the new research. I was talking to a trainer about this the other day. It's interesting to see the new research coming out about working out, because many of us have been raised with Got to work out hard, got to sweat, all this other stuff. And what we're actually seeing now is that is the 20 to 30 minute, very targeted workouts with different muscle groups that seem to be the most effective, rather than the extreme cardio or the extreme weightlifting or powerlifting or those type of things. I think it all goes back to cortisol, right? And stress. Anything that is exaggerating cortisol is actually working against the body, right? You can do it, just like you can do anything stressful for a period of time, but either you do the recovery work around it, or you take breaks from it, or you cycle it. But if you're going to do it day in and day out, it's going to work against you.
Oh my gosh. And we're jumping into environment. We talked about the central nervous system. I wanted to kind of retouch on that aspect about how environment is also super important to regulating that cortisol level.
Oh my gosh, so much. So I hate sharing this because I'm just as guilty, but Wi-Fi, blue light, our phones are inflammatory. They're emitting EMFs, and we are able to now see very clearly. You can use imaging like thermogram and other types of imaging to show how EMF exposure is actually inflammatory. So that is one of our biggest inflammatory traits. We're all guilty. I'm right there with everybody else, right? We're all guilty, right? So that is a big environmental factor nowadays when it comes to, you know, what's happening with our hormones. The light is disrupting. You remember, we receive light through the pineal gland, and that blue light that we're getting in constantly is disrupting the hormone axis as well, right? Because that disrupts how melatonin is produced. So that's a big environmental trigger. The others are some of what we've talked about. It's like the chemical load that we're exposed to nowadays, the glyphosate we're exposed to, even when we're trying to buy organic or choose organic. You know, these are things, it's still in the air. It's still, there's cross-contamination. So that's another one that we're having to contend with now. And then there's climate change, right? Like, I think there is an impact of climate change on our health, because now there are new viruses, new bacteria, right? New sort of issues and diseases to deal with that we didn't have to deal with in the past.
And it's making us more stressed out over it. Oh my gosh. I did have a question about the synthetic hormones, right? And hormone corrections, such as, for instance, thyroid medications, but then also synthetic hormones when you talk about like hormone replacements. Are you an advocate for any of those?
So I like doing what's going to work, but work in a gentle way. So for some patients, they need thyroid hormone. There are bioidentical versions of thyroid hormone, but they're typically sourced from pig is usually where they're coming from. So there's like NP thyroid and Nature's Thyroid and Armour thyroid, right? So they're bioidentical in that they act like ours. They're considered more natural because they're not synthetic. But for people that don't want anything associated with pig, they don't like those. So then we have to go to a synthetic option. The problem with synthetic, you know, Synthroid or levothyroxine or some of the medications that are out there, many of us with thyroid issues have a gluten issue, right? There's gluten will displace bromide, and bromide will displace iodine, or gluten has a lot of bromide, which then displaces iodine. And that actually leads to a lot of the thyroid conditions. Synthroid and levo have gluten in them. So there's an issue there. So sometimes we have to get it compounded or made in a particular way for a patient. When it comes to overall HRT, I always prefer bioidentical over synthetic because you can adjust the dose. It usually works with the body, but sometimes for certain patients, it's not as effective, right? The dose is too small. The delivery method is not effective. So then we go over to the pharmaceutical versions, and there are a couple that are now labeled bioidentical because certain components of them act bioidentically. For example, Vival is one, Climera is another, and Prometrium is another one as well. But even with those, you have to watch what the body's doing with the hormone. So the argument I always make is that whether it is your hormone that you're producing, a hormone that I prescribe, bioidentical or synthetic, it still needs to be monitored and watched. And we still need to understand what the metabolites are doing.
And then with I am thinking about aging, obviously, with that, with thyroid, everything, hormones. That's what I think about when I think about aging is the hormone change. So when we talk about hormone replacement therapy, I want to hopefully go gracefully, but is that toxic to use?
No, not when you're doing it in the right amount. It's all about dosing and the liver. So we're back to the liver again. A little tiny bit, like a spit dose of progesterone or a little tiny bit of estrogen, a bioidentical estrogen, is going to keep you vibrant from a skin, hair, cognitive standpoint. You know, it'll help some of the markers of aging. We'll need more if you're having osteopenia or osteoporosis or any of those type of things, or more if you're suffering, and I've had all these patients, if you're suffering from depression or memory changes or things like that, they're not toxic. What is toxic, though, your own hormones can be toxic. What is toxic and what we need to think about when it comes to hormones and toxicity is the body's inability to break a hormone down and package it and move it out. So your gut, this is why I wrote The Hormone Shift, because it's not an argument so much about which hormone is good and which hormone is bad. It's more an argument about what your body's going to do, whether it's your own hormone or one that someone gives you. So are you breaking it down? Are you metabolizing it? That means your gut, your liver, your gallbladder all have to work effectively. And if they're not and you're nutrient depleted, then that hormone is going to go the wrong way and you're going to have more of those dirty hormones, right? or those hormone metabolites that actually trigger disease. And then that's when we see the estrogen-based cancers or the higher rates of inflammation or autoimmune disease or some of these things that you see in a random research study that comes out here and there. So it's the better question to ask is, the first answer is yes, hormones will help you slow aging down. Absolutely. Absolutely. When we're hormone depleted, aging happens faster, right? But replacing hormones is about what your body is going to do with a hormone. And if you've checked your hormones decade to decade, and you have a sense of what your chemistry has looked like, then when we get to that conversation about hormone replacement, we know exactly where to go, right? We know where your sweet spot is. And that's really what we want every person to find for themselves, is when you do the work of holistic hormone balancing, how much hormone do you really need? You may not need a lot. You know, I mean, even me, I'm in my 50s and you'll laugh at my dose of progesterone. Like I wouldn't even tell a conventional GYN how much progesterone. They're going to be like, it's not doing anything. It's doing something. I know it's doing something, right? But it's probably under 10 milligrams three times a week. Standard dosing is 100 milligrams to start. If you give me 100 milligrams of progesterone, I'm going to be laid out on your couch, you know? So this is the art of doing this, is really bio-individualizing it, personalizing it after you've done all this other work.
Right. And not doing any guesswork or just like educating yourselves, right? Instead of stuffing stuff into. That's a beautiful, beautiful answer. So we're wrapping up here.
Okay.
I have a couple of rapid fire questions.
Rapid fire.
Quick, fast answers.
All right. What is your morning routine? Ooh, that's easy. All right. Wake up in the morning. I always start with a cup of tea. I spend about 10 to 15 minutes chit-chatting with my husband. That's like our bonding time. Then I try to peel away for about 10 minutes of meditation. I used to do it in the other order, but then he was getting neglected. So that's why the order is the way it is. And then I do about like 10 minutes or so of meditation. It depends on the day, but I try to get my workout in the morning as well. If I can't, then I'll usually do something at the end of the day. And then I jump into the day.
I love it. So what's your everyday non-negotiable? Might be involved in that.
My everyday non-negotiable, I have to have protein in the morning or I feel like crap.
That's a beautiful answer I've never heard before. What's your protein of choice?
It depends on where I am and what I'm doing, but I'm typically making a protein shake. On the weekends, it's like a full, like eggs, that whole deal. If I'm traveling, it'll be whatever I can get my hands on, yogurt, chia seed pudding, whatever we can do. So
beautiful. And what is one easy toxic-free habit we can all start practicing today?
Ooh, one easy toxic-free habit that we can all... Why am I like, oh, I know. One thing I would highly recommend everyone to do is to really start to dial into thinking about your food. Plan your food, plan your meals. That'll keep you away. At least Monday through Friday, it'll keep you away from increasing your toxic load because you're now in control of what you're eating.
Love that. And I assume your nightly routine, you're like, no blue light, anything special though?
I'm not good about the blue light.
Oh, okay.
You're like, blue light, blue light. I'm not going to pretend. I'm not really very good about that. I'm working on it. Definitely working on it. My nightly routine is very ritualistic, honestly. I wash my face and make sure I have my moisturizer on. I brush and floss my teeth. And then I usually pray before I go to bed. And that's it. Very simple.
Where can our listeners view, find out more about you, buy the book, all the things, stalk you on the internet? Things.
So you can definitely follow me on Instagram or TikTok. It's Dr. Taz MD. It's DrTazMD. The book is everywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And my clinics, I have a great team there who practice East-West medicine and put all of this together. Our Center Spring MD is CENTRE Spring MD. And you can find me in any of those places.
Yay, I love it. We'll put all of that in the show notes for sure, but follow both of us at Dr. Taz MD and at toxicfree.kb on Instagram. I'm actually on TikTok.
Woohoo!
I'm trying my best.
To, I know.
Yeah, subscribe to our shows. I know you have a podcast as well.
What's your podcast? It's Superwoman Wellness.
Superwoman Wellness. I love it. So subscribe to both of our shows. Pass them along to a friend, a family member, your community. And guys, remember, you're doing your best and your best is great. I'm literally floating on cloud nine from that last episode. You know, it makes me think about my past life, right? I'm living so many lives, but it makes me think about my youth and almost regretting that I was so hard on myself at certain times in my life and wishing I would have nurtured myself a little bit better. But knowing the information that I learned from Dr. Taz just right now, you know, it shows me of what I can build upon. She talked about building upon things. So it's not my one day, it's my day one starting today. So guys, before we truly end the show, let me get a little hot habits. Phone off. That is my hot habit of the moment. I have created, get this, phone hours, phone boundaries, and actually phone timeouts. You're probably thinking, how do you even do this? Well, I turn it on airplane mode. I flip that bad boy upside down. It's on do not disturb. One night, actually, I had just lost it. I was too overwhelmed, too bombarded with things. I put my phone into our safe and I locked it up. Yes, folks, I put it in the motherfucking safe. Something that kind of told me that I was too connected to my phone was that the talk texts were coming into me, right? They're coming into me and I was reacting urgently, but I wasn't taking a priority upon working on the self-care with myself. I was having a talk text conversation with someone, and of course my earbuds were in and someone was, you know, voicing something to me. And I said, okay, I'm going dark. I need to focus. I need to turn off my email. And I responded to them. And then all of a sudden, you know, I reacted to myself, but said it out loud. I said, thank you. Because they're like, no problem. I said, thank you. And you know what came back to me? Yeah. It was a no problem. You're welcome. It was Siri. And I was like, fuck this shit. The phone's going out the window. So that is my hot habit. And moving on to trendy trends. Trendy trends, we actually talked about this on the show, but the weight loss drug industry is at a high. Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, just to name a few. They strategically are around to help with diabetes and mostly for obesity, right? They work at the level at both the brain and the gut to reduce appetite intake and food. But guys, the problem with this is people that are grabbing these drugs that don't truly need it for their life or death health, it's causing a shortage. So think about that one. And a couple of stats is that in the US alone, 42% of people are obese. And by 2030, that is going to raise to 50%. So instead of trying to take the short drug, you know, the short string of things and the shortcut, why don't you just work on changing your lifestyle? It's going to have to be baby steps, but baby, you better believe you can do it. I have faith in you. I know you can. Not every day is going to be rainbows and butterflies, but you have to keep trying. My question was, you know, what's wrong here? Our food industry, our dirty hormones, as just mentioned in the episode. But remember, the baby steps. The risks with taking these drugs, I want to jump back into that, is that you can get acute gallbladder disease, acute kidney injury, and even potential risk for pancreatitis. Am I going to put this trendy trend into my life as a hot habit? A hell no. So, y'all, take care, and we'll see you next time.